good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cox, he need cut a dude, man.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, victors!
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Ahu, Ho-Chunk Raja, Wakunjahade, Hinga Dena. Welcome, Wendy. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. I'm here with Wendy Pilot and Ogama, and we do a daily thing here Monday through Friday. We bring out Native issues, and as we know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Awesome. Hey, so we got a lot of news happening. Why don't we go to Ogama with the news? Welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Annie Buju, Robert. So news today, not so great news today on the Stop Line 3 front. So over the weekend, there was a Line 3 pipeline worker who was rescued after he and his heavy equipment that he was operating became trapped under the water. Because the vehicle had shatterproof plexiglass, they actually ended up having to break down a nearby beaver dam to lower the water level inside the cab. The last I heard is that him and some of his rescuers were recovering from pretty severe hypothermia after that event, and that was near the Palisade camp or somewhere near close to there, from what I understand. So, you know, always prayers up to them. You know, we don't want Line 3 and we don't want those workers here, but that doesn't mean we want anybody to get hurt. So, since I haven't heard any updates, just putting out prayers for him and the people close to him. And again, last year when the Line 3 worker was killed just before the new year, after the incident with a forklift or a cherry picker, you know, like I said, it's an important thing to acknowledge that these are still really real people that are working on this pipeline, whether we want the pipeline or not. So that brings me to the other news. So a federal judge has denied the bid by the tribal and environmental groups, Red Lake Nation, and the environmental group that was helping them. They actually denied the bid for them to stop the construction of Line 3 temporarily until the rest of the federal trial could take place later this summer. So that's the second time in 2 weeks now that there's kind of been bad news on that front. So the U.S. court judge, Colleen Collar Cotelli, rejected the motion on Sunday. And she said the reason she rejected it was the plaintiffs were unlikely to succeed on their National Environmental Policy Act and Clean Water Act claims that allege the Army Corps of Engineers botched its risk assessment of potential spills of the heavier, harder to clean oil the replacement line would carry. The judge, Collar Cotelli, wrote that it was a close call between the balance of harms and public interest considerations, but she found that the Army Corps presented persuasive evidence that continuing to rely on the old pipeline also carries risk. She also said delaying the construction could result in the financial losses for Enbridge and the communities that are benefiting from construction work. So it's kind of the same old tale there. When we go through this, isn't it, Robert?
Yeah, it is. Robert has me muted. Sorry about that. Yeah, he's doing the computer here. But yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm glad you brought up that story about the Line 3 worker who, you know, did get hurt. And of course that, you know, we want him to get well and feel okay. It's, you know, it's not his fault. He's just doing, you know, his job.
Yes, exactly. You know, like I said, whether we want line three or not, we don't want anybody to get hurt over it. Certainly not the earth and certainly not other people. So with that being said, despite that negative news that we got this week again, there are still ways that you can get involved to help stop line three. So there is going to be, of course, Salsa Tuesday for the water in Park Rapids from 1 to 2. Show up in Park Rapids with signs and be ready to dance and be visible to stop line 3. On Wednesday, starting at 2 p.m., there's going to be an event. It's a digital rally to stop line 3 and build back fossil free. So that's going to be online event where you can learn from Winona LaDuke, Tara Hauska, and other faith leader partners about the tar sands oil pipeline, line 3, and the resistance to them, and what you can do to help call on President Biden to stop it. On Thursday, there's of course going to be another event going on. Thursday at 9 a.m., there's a 100% campaign virtual lobby day. So that is being put on to explain or to make a statement at the 2020 legislative session that just kicked off. There is a 100% clean energy bill that will be introduced to the Capitol. So what they're doing is on February 11th, they're going to lobby legislators for a vision of 100% clean energy. 9 a.m. is the welcome, 10 a.m. is the lobby training, 11 a.m. is meetings and optional mini sessions, and then the event ends at 1. Make sure you go to the 100% campaign virtual lobby day event online to RSVP for that event. Obviously, with COVID precautions, there's only a certain number of people that might be able to do the training. And then also on Thursday at 7:30 p.m. until 8:30 p.m., there's virtual calls to action from MN350. That will be a part of the biweekly calls to get an update on the status and the upcoming opportunities to get involved to stop it. Whether you've been involved or you're brand new looking for a place to engage, it's a really great place to start. You can sign up to get the Zoom link at mn350.org and then click on the events link and click line 3 action calls. Another really exciting thing that we have coming up starting on Wednesday, starting this week on the 11th is going to be the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women's and Relatives 4-day event. It's going virtual this year. So normally on Valentine's Day, we'd be in the Twin Cities or in our respective cities having a march for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives and Women. But this year, due to COVID, they're actually doing the event online. So that event, day one, is February 11th, and that starts with a 4-day sacred fire. Day two is the 12th. There's going to be a virtual art workshop. Day three is community sharing day. And day four, there's going to be a live Facebook panel from 12 to 1:40 p.m. Leading up to and throughout the 4-day event, they are encouraging you to actively post photos and content you have created that has contributed to raising awareness for our missing and murdered Indigenous relatives. And any photos you upload include a set of hashtags. So make sure you go to the 2021 MMIW-R Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Relatives Virtual Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives 4-day event. What else do we have here that's going on?
That's exciting. The Lieutenant Governor is going to be on a live symposium that we're going to help produce this on the 14th. And it looks like they have a whole slew, like 12 people speaking, people singing. It'll be not like we're there, but it'll be good.
Yeah, it's going to be really awesome. I'm excited to see it go virtual. A lot of stuff during the pandemic has gone virtual with a lot of success. And I'm hoping to just see the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives movement get bigger and bigger because we've had the opportunity to go digital and don't always have to be in person to be supportive.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be exciting and exciting producing it. And it's always a good event to go to. And maybe next year we'll be able to do that.
That's the hope, right? I haven't heard good news as far as that goes yet, but with the vaccine coming out, hopefully this will get better. I'm sure Dr. Anthony Stately can give us a little more information on that when he comes on later in the show, too.
Perfect segue. Hey, so do you have anything else going on? I know there's some sad news. There's some sad news up in the deep north, and we don't probably want to talk about it, but there was another passing up there to a water protector, and our prayers go up to their family.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. The only other thing I have for today would be a shout out. Artist Dio Kramer is producing Stopline 3 t-shirts as part of a fundraiser for Frontline Resistance. You can order at diokramer.wixsite.com or check her out on Facebook. The t-shirts are $30. They are printed in small batches and they sell out quickly, so make sure you go get yourself one.
I don't think I could fit in a small batch. Do you?
He needs an extra large batch.
easy. Yeah, well, I don't have enough t-shirts. People don't really realize this, Wendy and Ogama, but I'm trying to wear a different t-shirt each show, and we're going to see how many shows I can get on there without.
I'm trying to wear the same shirt every day.
Same shirt. So you're trying to confuse me when I'm looking at the shows.
I'm just kidding.
We also have Joe Morales showing going to be on today too.
Yep.
And, Ogama Pinigigi for all you do, and it was a great segment again, as always.
As always. This
yes, thank you.
Brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline, 651-304-9986.
Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Cudgy to everyone. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio Network. In 2017, as a response to the shocking events that transpired at Standing Rock and the lack of accurate and honest information coming from local and mainstream media, we felt we had to do something about it. That is why we created Native Roots Radio, then Pilot's Progressive Party, and finally, the new Native Symposium. We're still here. These shows have been supported by local businesses, and as you all know, unfortunately, they are no longer able to support us during this difficult time of the pandemic. This is why I'm here today, to ask you for your support. We feel it is so important to continue to bring this important information to you. Your support will help continue production and airtime costs. So please, if you can, visit Patreon Native Roots Radio Network and help in any way you can. Pinigi, and thank you for your support.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
Hey, hey, Wendy. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline, 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Wow, that was perfect.
One in a row.
One in a row. Hey, it's Monday, and guess what? We're here to get to talk to Dr. Stately. And
yes.
He is the CEO at Native American Community Clinic. Welcome, Dr. Stately.
Thank you, Robert and Wendy. It's good to be with you tonight.
Yeah, good
to see you. Wow, it's excellent. So, you know, we have some disturbing news and some disparities, and I wonder if you could touch a little bit about our BIPOC community and how it's being affected by COVID.
Well, I think that we continue to see in the state, but also nationally, that Native Americans are disproportionately impacted by COVID. A recent article that was just published by WebMed, but that I think I forwarded you the other day, but it was actually citing a report from another magazine article that was looking at data from the APM Research Lab. So the APM Research Lab tracks national data regarding COVID-19 vaccinations and infections and everything related to, you know, vaccinations, testing, and then mortality data as well. And things do not look good for most BIPOC communities. So Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities are greatly impacted. Of course, we can see it in the national news when we look at like how the disease and the impact of the disease in places that are heavily Latino in the Southwest. Those communities continue to be hit very, very hard. California, which has the highest rate of COVID positivity and infection rates in the world, actually right now, I think, is primarily a disease that is impacting primarily the Latino population. So our brothers and sisters from the South, right? Mm-hmm. That's disturbing to see.
Yeah, I read once a statistic about Native American people. It was like one out of, I don't know, I'm going to guess 450 Native American people. So one out of every 450 people who are Native American has died from COVID. And it might be like 473, but it's around that number, which is horrible.
Yeah. So when you have, like, I think one of the ways of thinking about that, people might think like, oh, well, that doesn't seem so, you know, so horrible. Mm-hmm. But when you compare it to the white population, right, the white population of the United States, it's one out of, several thousand, you know, 2,000-3,000 mm-hmm. people. So that's a significant rate and disparity. The impact of the way we measure disease and its impact in the community is we look at the rate per 100,000 people or per 1,000 people. And when we see that kind of rate, that disparity in that type of rate, it's really profound.
Yeah, Dr. Stately, I'm really happy to see how and impressed on how you are dealing with the giving shots to people in our community. I'm just really impressed in where you're at right now with opening it up to the homeless community. It's a beautiful thing. Can you tell our audience a little bit about that?
Sure. So this week, NAC will start to pivot, and we'll continue to provide during our regular clinic hours, twice a week. So on Wednesdays and Fridays, we're going to continue to provide vaccines to our Native American population from our clinic registry, who are 55 and over with a pre-existing condition. I know, Robert, you're right on the line there. I wish I could.
we're staying home. We're staying home and doing everything here.
That's good. We had a big event this last Saturday where we vaccinated about 120 elders and their spouses, Native elders and their spouses, and then some other folks in the community who are at risk and vulnerable. I actually got my vaccine at the clinic on Saturday. My arm is still painful. And
awesome.
But I was really happy to get that, and I felt a sense of relief immediately as soon as I had it. I was like, okay, one step down. Right, I got to go back and get the second shot, and I'll feel a little bit better about that. Mm-hmm. But we are going to pivot this week, and we will start doing more work with the unsheltered homeless population, and of course, which Native people in South Minneapolis are significantly overrepresented in that population. And we are going to be working with shelter staff and organizations that work with our community to vaccinate their staff and also the residents that come through their shelters. So it's important.
Wendy, that's awesome. It's boots on the ground and doing it for our people instead of, you know, the high percentage of all these white people across the country are getting vaccinated.
Absolutely. We have to get the people who need the vaccine first. Yeah, I mean, like people who have mental illness, people who are unsheltered, people who, you know, those are all the people who are most vulnerable to COVID. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. I was on a call earlier today with the state health department, tribal leaders call, health leaders call, and we were looking at the across the spectrum of everybody in the state of Minnesota who's been given access to the vaccine to distribute it. And tribal communities are on par with some of the larger health systems with being successful in rolling out and getting vaccines in arms in their community. So we're meeting that 90% threshold that we want to see in terms of being successful. And so I think that's a remarkable thing that, you know, in a fairly short period of time, large and smaller health systems, tribal health systems, have been able to pivot and do this work quickly and rapidly and be able to sort of do the type of work that's on par with large health systems that have huge resources, right?
Yeah, that's fantastic. You know, I hear a lot of people asking me and saying that they've had a bad reaction to the COVID vaccine. And my response to them is, well, that's great. You're having an immune response. You know, can you explain that a little bit more so people can understand that that's a really good thing to get? If you're not feeling good after the vaccine, it's good.
Sure. And a lot of people have, there's a wide varied response in any vaccine, right? Like, yep. I mean, people get a little bit sick when they get the flu vaccine. The thing is that what you want to do is you want to recognize that, like, if you get pain in your arm, you get body aches, you get a little slight fever, those kinds of things, that's all an indication that your immune system is working properly. It's launching its response to the recognition of some type of antigen that's been introduced to your body, right? And so that's what you want. You want to see your immune system responding and building its force. When we get a fever, it's an indication that our immune system is producing lots of T cells and also other fighting cells that are going to respond to some type of infection. So that's what you want. I've heard lots of folks, like you might remember in November, I tested positive for COVID and I was hospitalized. So I was just outside that 90-day window when you were like advised not to get the vaccine until you're after 90 days. I was just outside or right on the line from that window. And I had, you know, my arm was pretty sore the day after I got the vaccine. Difficult for me to lift it. And I also on Sunday night.
Oops, we just lost the doctor.
Oh, he's there, but I can't hear him. Oh, no. Dr. Stately, we lost you.
Okay, well, shoot. We'll have to have that story come up a little later tomorrow. Or next Monday.
Well, maybe he could just stay on for a minute and we could just finish. Oh, we just got lost you, but we have to take a short break. Can you just finish up your thought as soon as we come back?
Sure.
Fantastic. Sure. Thank you.
Great. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break.
Jay Selby's, an airy plant-based cafe serving up American classics, nestled in the heart of St. Paul in the historic Cathedral Hill neighborhood at 169 Victoria Street. Jay Selby's serves great plant-based food and only plant-based foods where customer service is a priority and a comfortable, cool space for like-minded people to gather and enjoy a sustainable, environmentally friendly, and compassionate meal. As the Star Tribune writes, Jay Selby's is an innovative vegan restaurant that does a spot-on Big Mac. It's a good day for good food.
Robbins Kaplan LLP protects and defends American Indian tribes. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan LLP seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org, mn350.org, or find us on Facebook at MN350. Building a climate movement in Minnesota.
Hi, Minneapolis. This is Randy Rhodes. Listen to me. Weeknights, 10 to midnight, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
We have vital information we would like to share with you. The Department of Indian Work St. Paul partnered with the Minnesota Department of Health to open the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline. They provide information on testing sites, isolation space, vaccines, housing assistance, and food resources. If you or someone you know has questions about COVID-19 or has questions to determine if you should get tested, please call them at 651-304-9986. Again, the number is 651-304-9986. The Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline is open for calls Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Call the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 hotline at 651-304-9986. That's 651-304-9986.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 10 below, Tuesday sunny with a high near 7, Wednesday partly cloudy with a high near 6, and Thursday partly cloudy with a high near 0. Use Snap Construction for your next home improvement project. You can trust Snap as they're an A-rated Angie's List Super Service Award-winning contractor. Plus, they're the first company in the metro to push the lifetime craftsmanship warranty. Call 612-333-SNAP for a free no-obligation quote or visit snapconstruction.com.
Aneen, I'm Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Wendy, we have Dr. Stately on the line, and he had a little bit of information here that we wanted to really amplify. Welcome back, Dr. Stately.
All right, thanks. So yeah, I think before we left, I was just talking a little bit about how your body launches an immune response when you're given a vaccine. And lots of people misinterpret that, you know, the low-grade fever, the body aches, maybe their soreness in their arm or their joints, the site of the location where they get the shot, they misinterpret that as being like, you know, an indication that they're getting sick, when in fact, actually it's the response that your body launches to let you know that it's having the normal reaction that your immune system should have in response to the introduction of a vaccine.
That's great. I'm glad you made that clear. I hear that a lot, and I see that a lot on Facebook, and we get a lot of people asking that question. So
yeah. And I really appreciate it, too. And I also appreciate when we look back at the comments on our Facebook Live, a lot of people are now convinced with your information that you've been putting out there during our show, are convinced to take the shot. And that really warms my heart that we're doing due diligence for mm-hmm. our community.
Yeah.
Well, it's important. We want to be able to reach herd immunity, you know, with as rapidly as we possibly can. I know that lots of people have concerns about the variants. Lots of people have concerns about things like reinfection. They have concerns about these kinds of things. But one of the things I always try to, when I talk to my relatives about this, and I talk to a lot of people, I talk to my own cousins, my aunties, my uncles, the shot is only 95% effective, or you know, you get the first shot and you have less protection until you get the second shot, and then 2 weeks after that you're supposed to wait until you kind of like drop your guard a little bit. One of the things I always say to them is the difference between taking the vaccine and not taking the vaccine at all is that if you take the vaccine, you have some percentage of chance of being immune to it or to have some protection. Whereas if you don't take anything, you have 0% chance. Mm-hmm. Like all you really have is like what we have, what all of us have, which is like wash your hands, wear a mask, socially distance, those kinds of things. So I think that, those, but the concerns that people have about the reactions and all those things, those are important to think about. So one of the reasons, when we give you the vaccine, we sit and we watch you for about 15-20 minutes to make sure that you're not going to have a severe anaphylactic shock or reaction or anything like that. And if you have some other type of underlying condition, or you've had other vaccines that you have been allergic to in the past, we watch you for 30 minutes, right? So we're taking every precaution we can to make sure that people are going to be okay after they take this vaccine. We don't just sort of like shoot you in the arm and send you out the door.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stately. We really, really appreciate that information.
And we're so proud and so blessed to have you on Mondays. Again, thank you so much, and have a great night, and Pini Gigi for all you do.
Rich, thank you so much for allowing me to be with you tonight. Take
thank
care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Be well.
Wow, Wendy, that was Dr. Stately, and it was a good call to have him come back, because that was, some information that I need to be reminded, I need to hear when I hear these anti-vaxxers and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely, and, people need to get the vaccine as soon as possible before the virus mutates even more, right? Mm-hmm. So we need that to happen right away. So people who want to wait, maybe you want to get it now so that, the less the virus infects other people is less chance for it to mutate. So,
hey, we got another guest on here.
I'm excited.
We're really excited. Joe, welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. And can you tell people who you are and who you represent?
Sure. My name is Joe Morales. My Indian name is Nape Washte. It means good hands. I sit on the Grand Governing Council of the American Indian Movement, and I am the Sundance Chief at the Gathering of the Pipestone, Sundance in Pipestone, Minnesota.
Wow, that's exciting. And I know you and your significant other were up here in Minnesota before our highs were 20 below, but you were up at Stop Line 3 Camp McGeezy up in Fond du Lac. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience and what you want people out there to know?
Sure, we certainly were up there. McGeezy is an action camp. We were there for about 9 days, I think. And we were able to slow down the pipeline in several different ways. One was a few times we were able to stop some of the big equipment from crossing the road, which if we can milk it holds them up for an hour or so. The big action we were involved in, and you may have seen on the national news, our friend Bird, also known as Jeffrey, was able to get onto one of the pipes and stay on the pipe for about 7 hours. What happened is we we trespassed onto their land to check the sandbags that they're supposed to use. So when they put the pipes in, they put sandbags on top of them, which are to, you know, to hold everything in place. But if those sandbags are frozen, what happens is they make the pipes go oblong, and the pipes will leak, and they do burst. Of course, Enbridge was putting frozen sandbags on those pipes, so we felt it was necessary to stop them. And so Jeffrey courageously jumped onto one of the pipes. We did a soft blockade to keep the emergency vehicles from getting in to get him off of the pipe, and we were able to hold that for a short time. And then myself and another water protector were arrested along with Jeffrey, but we were able to hold him up for 7 hours. In that time, the hole that they were digging, which goes right through a wetlands, great place to put a pipeline.
Jesus.
It did fill up with about 9 feet of water, and they were not able to continue working. So we know that water froze overnight. So it was definitely longer than a 7 hour holdup. So that was good.
Wow. That is good.
And that's amazing. You know, 7 hours here, 2 hours here, an hour here, it all adds up.
Right. And it costs Enbridge money.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Every time it costs them money.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So you were up there for 9-10 days. And how do you feel? What can you tell our audience about possibly going up there and joining? I know there's actions all the time. We just had somebody up in Tarahouska's camp was arrested playing the piano. I thought that was pretty fun and interesting to see them bring out a piano right by the pipeline and get arrested playing the piano. I'm not sure what song they were playing, Joe, though.
Awesome. Well, yeah, what they need at McGeezy is bodies. Like I said, they are an action camp, and they are always looking to do actions, whether they're impromptu or whether, you know, whether they're planned. So what they need is bodies. Be prepared to camp. Be prepared to rough it. We were fortunate in that the coldest it got while we were there was minus 11, and that was overnight. Do send prayers to those folks who are camping out. It is cold. It is really cold. So send good prayers, good thoughts. Head up that way if you can. Try and be arrestable if you can. If you're looking to help out with donations, firewood, firewood, firewood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So before I let you go, I got like a couple minutes, Joe. And one of the things I'd really like you to bring up about your work with American Indian Movement, and talk just a few minutes about really what the movement's all about here in 2021.
As people may know, the new executive director of the American Indian Movement is Lisa Bellinger. We felt that it was important as we move into this next phase of the American Indian Movement and the next phase of the American Indian Movement, that we need to do what we have traditionally done, and that is to look toward the women for our leadership. You know, we are excited that AIM Patrol has been reactivated. They're doing great things. They did great things after the murder of George Floyd. We're moving into the future, taking care of our women, taking care of the water, and looking at bringing in our youth. We have created two youth positions on the Grand Governing Council of the American Indian Movement, and so we are looking to take our guidance also from the youth. If we're not supporting our youth in the actions that they're going to want to do or the political steps that they're going to want to take, then we may as well give it up. You know, the youth is what it's all about.
And you've always told me, too, that this has always, always, always been a spiritual movement.
Yes, the American Indian Movement was founded as a spiritual movement first and remains a spiritual movement first and foremost. If you don't have, if you don't do things with spirit, with spirit first, then, you know, it's very easy to get unfocused. Doing ceremony before actions or before anything like that builds that community, and community is what it's all about. Without spirituality, without ceremony, without our songs, without our traditions, we are not. And so we have to remember to do all those things in a good way. Start out with ceremony, start out with prayer, and that's it.
Wow. Well, Joe, I really appreciate you stopping by, and it's always good to talk with you, and it's always great to be connected some way with the American Indian movement. So I want to say Pini Gigi for being on and spending some time with us in Oregon. You're in Oregon, right?
We are home. It's 46 degrees.
Lucky you. Geez. Wow. Lucky you. Yeah. Well, Pini Gigi again, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, Wopi Watanka to you, Robert. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, that was awesome, Wendy.
Really awesome, yeah. That's a water warrior for sure.
We'll be right back with Wendy's Sacred Animal section. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back.
MN350 is a grassroots, volunteer-driven organization fighting for climate justice and a swift transition away from a fossil fuel-based economy. To get involved, visit mn350.org, mn350.org, or find us on Facebook at MN350, building a climate movement in Minnesota.
Robbins Kaplan, LLP, protects and defends American Indian tribes. With its American Indian law and policy practice, Robbins Kaplan, LLP, seeks to redefine excellence for high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country. Founded and led by former United States attorneys Brendan Johnson and Tim Purden, their American Indian law and policy practice exists to bring justice to tribal clients whose claims in the past have been dismissed or ignored due to their underdog status. Their American Indian law lawyers understand the challenges tribes face when state and local government infringe on tribal sovereignty and the federal government neglects its trust responsibilities. Their passion for tribal sovereignty and self-determination is the driving force behind their practice, fueling their tribal advice and advocacy, especially when tribes are forced to litigate against powerful interests. Robbins Kaplan LLP, representing American Indian tribes, tribal government boards and commissions, individual tribal members, and American Indian business and business concerns. For more information, visit robbinskaplan.com.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a free, confidential, and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline available at 1-844-762-8483 or by using the chat now icon at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer daily support and referrals for resources, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time.
This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
Hi, everybody. My name is Hanajihi Hani, and that means cares for them.
This portion is brought to you by MN350, Wendy.
Yeah, this portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Welcome. And hey, you know, this is the sacred animal portion of our show. And really, I can't wait to hear what you have to say today, because it's just been amazing. We do it 5 days a week, and you always have something very pertinent and very relative.
I have good news today.
Whoa.
But first, before I start, I want to thank Dr. Stately and for all his really knowledge and information about COVID-19. And, you know, after we're finished with this COVID-19, he'll help us with a lot of other things also. And Joe talking about, you know, water warriors there and to stop Line 3. So I just wanted to say that, thank them. I am a volunteer for the Humane Society of the United States, and that's the big national organization. And my title has just been changed. We're called now Humane Policy Volunteer Leaders. So that's really shows and tells more about what we do, Humane Policy Volunteer Leaders. And you know, Robert, one of the most passionate things that I like to work on and to help out with is to stop puppy mills, right? Because we have our dog here, Gracie, who was a puppy mill breeder dog for 7 years. So she stayed in a cage for 7 years. She never walked on the ground. Nobody ever held her. Nobody ever talked to her nicely. She never went to the vet. And she just popped out puppies twice a year, and her puppies were sold to pet stores and online and elsewhere. But we're slowly, working on stopping pet stores from selling cats and dogs that come from puppy mills. And here in Minnesota, Eden Prairie, St. Paul, Roseville, and I believe Carver have ordinances now that stop the sale of pet stores. So the pet stores are not allowed to sell dogs and cats. They're allowed to have adoption events. They're allowed to sell food and leashes and all that kind of stuff and do training classes. But that's what we want to stop. And I have an article here from the Humane World, which is Kitty Block's blog. And Kitty Block is the CEO and president of the Humane Society of the United States. And her blog, and I'm really excited to see this, dated February 3rd, more states, including New York, move to end pet store puppy sales.
Wow, that's big.
So I'm really, it is huge, because we all know that New York is so large. So here it goes. New York has a dubious distinction of being home to more puppy-selling pet stores than any other state in the nation. This could be about to change as lawmakers there move on legislation that would prohibit all dog, cat, and rabbit sales in pet stores. So rabbits are also bred like that, too. I know you want to shake your head and just roll your eyes, because mm-hmm. some of this stuff is really unbelievable. Bills have already been introduced in the State Assembly and Senate, S-1130/A-4283. And we have reason to be optimistic, because a similar bill passed the full Senate last year. If it becomes law, residents in New York will still be free to bring home a pet from a rescue or shelter or from a responsible breeder they have met in person. Remember, responsible breeders do not sell through the pet stores or to people they haven't met. So a responsible breeder will have you in their home. You'll be able to see the breeder dogs, the mom dog and the dog, daddy dog, and they want to make sure that their puppies are going through to good homes.
Wendy, you have a statistic, and I don't want to misquote it, but there's a statistic out there of for every person having a dog to get rid of all these dogs that are.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So every person in the United States has to have at least four dogs to get rid of the homeless dog population in the United States. So every single person in the United States has
every child, every baby,
every person,
infant.
Yep, every person grandma. In the United in grandma too and yeah. grandpa has to have four dogs each. And cats are even more. Each person in the United States has to have seven cats each to compound. So I always say, adopt, don't shop. Don't right. even if there is a responsible breeder, don't go to a responsible breeder, because there's too many dogs out there and they're getting euthanized. These are really good dogs and cats, who are worthy of good homes.
We experience that as a person traveling with the dogs and bringing them from Indiana. We used to do that.
Transporting them.
Thank you. And they all have souls and you can all can feel it and they all feel like they're being rescued. So, and that was what's great about our dogs.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up. I want to start doing some more transports, but they've stopped because of COVID now. So that's really...
And you can do them during the week when COVID settles down too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can't wait. You know, pet stores, Robert, they serve as a front for these puppy mills, which mistreat the animals in their care, denying them the most basic needs, like I was talking about, like food, water, and medical care. The suffering is further exacerbated once the animal are at the stores. While undercover at a chic Manhattan pet store in 2017, HSUS's investigator found a back room filled with sick puppies. The puppies were delivered en masse from unknown puppy mill states, and buyers were misled about the puppy's health. Among the sick dogs, our hidden camera documented were a French bulldog puppy who shed a quarter of its body weight, a Pomeranian with such advanced eye infection that her eyes were crusted shut, and an English bulldog with pneumonia so severe that the animal was struggling to breathe. The store, Chelsea Kennel Club, closed down soon after last year. A Manhattan Supreme Court judge fined the owner, listen to this, $3.9 million for failing to obtain needed veterinary care for puppies and misleading the public about their health.
Wow.
That's a lot. And you know what? That pet store had to leave. They shut down shop and they're closed now.
Well, hopefully they're not behind closed doors and doing stuff on the internet.
Exactly. So fortunately, we're really happy, and I'm glad that New York is finally coming along and going to be getting a bill to stop this. My goal here in Minnesota is to work and get every state, every city,
county.
Every county, every city in this state of Minnesota to have a pet store ordinance, which will stop the sale of the animals coming from these puppy mills. We used to get our dog Wanda groomed and Gracie groomed up in where was that? Where?
No, I'm not.
What town was that?
I wanted to say Babbitt, but it's not Babbitt.
Well, it's near Babbitt. So it's near Babbitt. And right north of Babbitt is a largest puppy mill here in Minnesota. It is still there now. It is still operating. And they have over 900 dogs in that particular puppy mill.
Yep.
And they're suffering day in and day out.
Again, Wendy, that was positive. Really good news, and I appreciate what you do for our relatives that swim and walk on all fours, and really it's always heart-wrenching to hear some of this.
Yeah, I think dogs, you know, people love dogs. Most people love dogs, and, you know, a lot of people have dogs in their homes, so we want to make sure that they're taking care of the dogs and the cats.
Awesome. Pina Gigi again. I want to give a shout out to Ogama for her great news segment and working behind the scenes. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I want you all to remember we need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. Free Leonard Peltier. We are the seventh generation. We're still here.
We're still here.
Thank you, Pina Gigi.
Wajile, wajile.